Hello, and welcome to the Service Contractors Business Presentation of the Month. This monthly CD web series represents yet another step in accomplishing Grandian Associates' vision of teaching contractors how to run profitable businesses. Each month, a different national speaker from throughout the service and trades industry shares dozens of cost-reducing, profit-increasing ideas to help you become a more profitable company. Now, our longtime listeners will remember that about every 18 months or so, we offer a presentation that applies to life as well as business. This presentation is entitled Integrity in the Workplace, and it deals with the foundation stone of why we work. Pastor Steve Deneff has presented several programs for this series in the past and has always been very well received. Steve is the head pastor of College Wesleyan Church in Marion, Indiana. Steve has a God-given gift to relate the Bible to everyday life. And this month, he's going to provide a fresh biblical perspective on why we go to work each day. Hopefully, after listening to this presentation, you will have a renewed enthusiasm to be the best you can be at what you do. Since this presentation is a little off our normal topic, we again offer each listener the option of extending their paid subscription 1 month free of charge if for some reason you find this content objectionable. Thus far, we have never had anyone take us up on that offer, but the offer still stands. We really would like to have your feedback on this presentation, so if you have a few extra minutes in your day, drop us an email with your comments.
Now, how many of you have ever worked in a job you hated? Now, I did say now, so if your boss is next to you, you're okay, because you can just turn afterwards and say, oh, no, that was the previous one. So how many of you have ever had a job that you just absolutely hated? May I see your hand? Some of you who did not raise your hand have never had a job. You need to get a job. Boy, I've had a job since I was 12 years old. And I've had several jobs working my way through school. And I kept in front of me the goal, someday I will not have to do this job. And here's the mistake that you cannot make, and I made it. Mistake is this: once I get a job that I know I like, then I will practice all of these things that Peter's talking about. You cannot think this way. Because if we do not learn submission in the job we have, we will never get it or have it in the job that we want. You see that? You learn it on lesser, if you will, lesser things. So the idea that someday I will fulfill my dream, I will get my degree, or I will move into the perfect job, and there everything will be clicking. What you'll do is you'll find somebody who has the job that you want, and everything is not clicking. So there are times when you feel a little bit like that slave. In fact, that's why 1 Peter is so powerful. Because the slavery that he's talking about is not early American slavery. He's not talking about slavery in America in the 1800s. That slavery was cruel, it was inhumane, it was criminal, it was sinful. And so to endorse that kind of slavery is asking somebody to endorse something that is just flat wrong. In fact, it was the church, the very church, who led the way in abolishing the kind of slavery that you and I know of. It was people in the church motivated by religious convictions that educated slaves in private schools, that organized underground railroads, that refused to serve sacraments to people in the South who had slaves. It is religious people in African countries today who collect money, buy slaves, and the moment they buy them, set them free, sometimes at the price of 50,000 pounds per slave. It was people in leadership with religious convictions who did not believe that their faith was a private matter, but they allowed their faith to influence their public mind. And aren't we glad they did? That these things no longer exist. But the slavery that I'm talking about is early Roman slavery. You'll recognize some of the characteristics. For instance, it was not just a few. It was 35% of the population. You couldn't tell who they were by looking at the way they dressed and by the color of their skin. For a slave back in that day was the same ethnic origin as you are. Slaves in those days were highly educated. They were educated even by their masters. In fact, some of them were more educated than their masters. And so they filled every rank in the public life. There were slaves who were cooks, lawyers, physicians, personal attendants, musicians, engineers, and then there were daily, hourly, out-in-the-field kinds of slaves. So you weren't looking for a kind of person, you weren't looking for a type of dress, and you weren't looking for a sociological strata. In fact, if you were a slave, the writers tell us, there is nothing about your condition that brought all slaves together and made all slaves feel the same. That's how it was in America, but that's not how it was when Peter wrote his letter. If you were a slave back then, you could own property. You could even own other slaves, and you were one. You had private belongings. Sometimes you had your own money. You could gather in public meetings, and there were even laws written to protect you when you were at work. And if your masters abused you harshly, there were places like shelters that you could go, for instance, in the city of Athens, where you could stay there and you'd be protected from your abused master. You see it? What I'm describing is not a condition that you know of, unless that condition is work. Most people in their jobs today feel to some degree like a slave. There's how I know. Because the one thing that was true of all slavery everywhere all the time is that for the most part, it deprived a person of their dignity. It's not that you were less of a human, that was the problem. You were the same human your master was, but everything that you did was for your master and not for you. And so when you produced things, your production belonged to him. You were free, if you wanted to collect your money and buy your own freedom. But the problem is most slaves didn't have that kind of money. So they just stayed in the system year after year after year. They needed their slavery the way a worker needs his job today. Now you start to see that this is a remarkable system they had. Listen. Here was a system of labor where they actually took somebody out, educated them, provided for them, gave them health care, and all the while they were doing these things, deprived them of their dignity. And I am no longer talking about slaves. Now I'm talking about middle-class America. I'm talking about physicians who are trapped inside of the system. They're losing sight of the thing that motivated them to become healers in the first place. I'm thinking about city employees or about teachers who have lost sight of the reason they started to teach or the reason they started to serve because they are trapped inside of a political struggle and it's beginning to drain them of their strength. Maybe their dignity. I'm thinking about people in their 50s who have done the same job year after year, and they can no more quit that job than a slave could quit his, so they're just holding on and waiting for the day of retirement. I'm thinking about businessmen, businesswomen, who are bored with making money. They know how to do that, and they've done it for years. But something's missing in the pursuit of prosperity, and they don't know what it is. So they go off to work every day because it's the only life they know. I'm thinking about people who are in one season or another of their life, and they feel like they've lost control of the thing that they're doing and the reason that they're doing it. It's all they know. They can't just up and change. Not now. Not at this time in their lives. And when you think of people like this, you start to think of the ways in which slavery or modern employment in America today, little by little, sucks the dignity out of people. Randy Hodgson's a sociologist at Ohio State University, or what Buckeyes call the Ohio State University. Whatever. He has surveyed and interviewed hundreds of people around the country and compiled his work into a book called Dignity at Work. And together with that and some of the observations that I've seen and the way people work today, I've summarized the different categories of reasons why people feel depleted of dignity. I would just list them, but I have to read them to you. And while I'm doing this, in each category, would you kind of keep score? Would you kind of go, yeah. Because your boss may be close by, and you don't want them to hear you. So just sort of nod. Or say under your breath, thank you. Say that again. Yeah. Reason number one, he said, was mismanagement or abuse. Problems arise and the owners don't handle them right. They underhire or they hire incompetent people over us. They don't oversee the people who are overseeing us, and they don't hold them accountable. They make us report, and then they don't read the reports. They do not affirm us or even notice what we are doing. They entertain criticism about us without coming to us. They waste money and complain they cannot pay us. They let equipment run down, and they take too long to fix it. Sometimes they talk out of both sides of their mouth. They make snap judgments that affect us. They change their minds without keeping us informed. One person said, I check in every morning to see how my job has changed. Somebody in the middle of the night gets an idea, and I get to the morning, and my whole world is upside down. And all God's people said, just hold your breath. Category number two, overwork. The pressures of the profit margin or of getting the work done is passed on to us without passing on the benefits of ownership. So they underhire. They pressure us to work overtime, or they speed up the line. They do not give us what we need to do the job, and yet they still hold the standard over our heads. And the reward for work well done is just more work to do. They assign us to areas we were not hired to do. We don't even know how to do, and they still expect us to do it without any assistance or without any oversight. They eliminate all forms of leisure from the day. They compress the breaks and the lunches into very short periods. One person said, they rule the place by the clock. The supervisors, she said, will not allow women to clock out until 4:15 or their pay will be docked. And yet when you go to clock out, the line is always so long that you don't get to clock out until 4:25. You say, oh, it's no big deal. Well, in her mind, they are always taking 10 minutes, never giving it. Category three, unrealistic expectations. The standards are so high, and quite often they are so self-imposed. It's not somebody else saying, meet this. It's you, the professional, you, the career worker, you, the worker, who has internal standards that are so high, and you do not have the adequate resources to meet them, that you start to lose your autonomy and independence as a worker. For instance, doctors consistently have to make decisions every day based on a person's health, and they have only limited information of the person. They have limited funds available to them. They have limited access to technology or to medicine that can cure the patient. And sometimes they don't even have cooperative patients. School teachers consistently find themselves having to get the scores up when they get very little help at home. As though all of the work and the onus were on the teachers in the school. Administrators must move into a place and they must, quote, turn the organization around, but they are not allowed to raise the budget. They can't even fire the boss's incompetent son. And the place has a long history of failure. And the standards are turn it around. Managers find themselves having to increase productivity all the while they lay people off because they have to. inadequate funds. Coaches find that they must compete and win, even though they only have a few scholarships to give away. And the talent is drifting off to other places. You see what we're talking about? These are unrealistic expectations. And even if somebody doesn't hold them over your head, you have them of yourself. And it just starts to tear away at you. You know, it's no wonder workers today say, you know, when you're in your 20s, you're thinking, yeah, man, who retires? Work until you drop. Only old people retire. And then you get to be about 40, and you're thinking, I can't wait to retire. Then you get to be about 50, and you start thinking, I need a change. And then when you're 60, you say, I can't wait to retire. Because you see how your whole life has been put on hold. And little by little, it's not just the lack of progress, it's the loss of dignity. And so I think Peter speaks to both audiences. Now listen closely to what he is saying. Submit. Go into that situation and submit. And remember what we said last week? When he tells us to do that, there are two ways that we always fight back. One of those ways is to resist, push back, try to get some authority on our own, try to take over the situation. And the other way is to withdraw, resign, hide inside the company. Just do your job, and they will leave you alone. When people resist, they resist because in their minds they have an idea that all the world should be fair. And we agree, don't we? If you do bad things should happen to you. You do good things should happen to you. And so what happens is when that little law that we have in our brain, all the world is fair, starts to get turned upside down, we start thinking we have permission to right the world. I will make it right. Because if I can make the world fair again, I have done an act of righteousness. I'm not talking about people in the world anymore. I'm talking about people, religious people, who justify the resistance they have against their leaders in their workplaces because they don't think things are fair. One worker tells me she was cheated one day's vacation. Don't worry, she said. I took enough supplies out of the place to keep my husband busy for a long time. Another secretary says she accidentally threw away records she knew her successor would need in order to succeed on her last day of work. She knew she needed those records. I knew she needed them. And I don't even work there. People consistently take things that belong to their bosses under the guise that their boss is so rich he won't miss it. He has plenty, and besides, I don't get enough anyway. Construction workers tell me, contractors tell me that the number one problem people on the work site is theft. It's not unsafe working conditions. That's what you would think. It's theft. And who is stealing? The workers themselves. The ones that they pay to come and work are taking things from their bosses. And the reason they're doing it, when we ask them, because, I mean, it's fair. I'm not getting enough anyway. The person has too much. They'll never miss it. In their minds, there is this idea that the system should be fair, and if it's not fair, it's broken, and if it's broken, we have permission, a license from God, if you will, to fix it. This is the thing that Peter is speaking out against. When he tells us to submit to conditions that are harsh, he is telling us to submit to God. I think we can take everything that Peter says and put it under three words that are in verse 19. Conscious of God. huge. Because most Americans have in their mind a dissected worldview. World falls into two compartments. This is where I worship, and this is where I work. This is secular, and this is sacred. We make moral judgments over here, and we make judgments based on information and fact and data over here. Peter is going to smash that assumption by saying something that is completely out of our minds. He is going to say that there is no sacred and secular great divide. We are to go off to our places of work as though we were going off to work for God. And so he says, when you go off, you are to be conscious of God. This does not mean that we go to work and we think all day about God. But it does not mean that we go off to work and act like Christians do. It means that when we go off to work, we are aware that God is somewhere on the premise. It means that we put God in between ourselves and the job that we are doing, so that we're no longer working just for the person. And if we're the boss, we're no longer employing just people. Because we have put God in between ourselves and either the worker or the boss. And that radically changes the relationship and the way that we go to work. Most of us have the assumption, in our country at least, that the reason you work is for a living. You get money, you pay the bills, you meet budget, you develop a lifestyle, and you sustain the lifestyle. Even if you go to college and you get a degree, you'll go off into a career and you'll say, I'm going to do this because I want to change lives. But invariably, what will happen to us is we will very subtly slip into a lifestyle. And before long, a certain income becomes necessary to support the lifestyle. Now we have to work in order to afford the stuff we want to do and the things that we have. And from that moment on, we are working at least in part to make a living. Now we'll start worrying about things like inflation or minimum wage. In countries that work for a living, we even divide the whole nation into classes based upon their income. And of course, the problem with this is that if you only work for a living and you can make a living without working, why work? If you can get free money and free meals and you can get somebody to give you something and you don't have to, if you can go to work and actually avoid it, why would you work? Your needs are being met. This is where the Christian mind is fundamentally different. While some people believe that work is a result of the curse, if you are a Christian, you believe that work is the result of creation. For even while some people point to the fact that Adam had to till the ground by the sweat of his brow, Christians believe that even before Adam was tilling the ground, God created a garden and put Adam in it with these words, to keep it and to watch it. And those words mean that God placed a human being inside of his creation in order to subdue the earth, in order to make the earth organized, for it is given to weeds. The whole idea that we have weeds today because of sin, we cannot prove from Genesis. Maybe they were pulling weeds even before the fall. Because that's part of what is involved in subduing a garden. And so when we work, we are actually co-creators with God over an area that He has given us. We are like co-governors over something He has given us to govern. That's an entirely different view of our jobs now. But this is the way it is. Like the preacher said to the farmer, "My, that's a beautiful garden you have." The farmer said, "You should have seen it when God had it all by Himself." That's how it is. God will create something, and then He will put one of us in the situation in order to partner with Him in bringing good out of the situation. So now the question becomes this. When you go off to work tomorrow, what is God doing through you to subdue the earth? What chaos, entropy, won't happen now because God has met you there in your job to subdue it and to bring it back? What will happen that would not have happened if you and God did not show up together? We are not going off to our jobs, people, and working for God. We are going off to our jobs and working with Him. He is in our business. That's a fundamentally different view. It has always been this way, though, hasn't it? This is the laws of pharmacy itself, that for every disease that nature gives us, there is somewhere in the world, in some far forsaken rainforest somewhere, something already growing that cures the disease that we have. But watch it. Somebody's got to find it, harvest it, and then arrange it into a construct that is useful for medicine so that the disease can be cured. But we are not able of creating the plant. We are only able, with God-given abilities, of harvesting the plant and turning the plant into something useful to subdue the earth. And this works in every area, whether it is in management or in banking or in education or in hourly work or in construction work. God, through us, produces and creates things that would not be created without us. Now, if our work is not living, if our work is a sacrament, if our work is that place in this world where God and us do something together, then while we are in that work, we are not working for them, but for us. This is what he means when he says, go off to your work and act as though you were conscious of God. Do you remember a few months ago, we talked about an interesting concept that came out of the Sermon on the Mount? Here was the idea. If Jesus comes to the world today as a human being, and he did that at least once, then maybe Jesus comes not as self, but as other. Maybe he comes as the other person and not just as the self. And when you think of it like this, everything is suddenly different for you. Because we have in our minds an image of what Jesus would look like if he came to earth today. He would probably think the way that we're thinking. So we say Jesus is a king. He would never come as an incompetent person. But what if he did? Or Jesus is so meek and lowly, he would never come as a boss who just wields his power. But what if he did? Jesus is smart. He would never come as a student with ADD who just couldn't track my lectures. But what if he did? What if Jesus comes as other? And not only other, but he comes as the least of these. If we know anything about Jesus, we know that he hides in mangers and rides on donkeys. It would not be unlike him to come in a way that you least expect. So think of it like this. In our places of work, we might find it unfathomable that God would ever come like our boss. But what if he did? It is unreasonable for some of us to think that if Jesus were my boss, he would fire me. But what if he would? Suddenly, everything changes. I have now put Jesus in between me and the work that I do. Much like the candle of presence is in between me and you now, the presence of God comes in between you and the people that you work for. But watch this, it also comes in between the person who is the boss and the people who work for them. Now, if God is in between us and I'm the boss, I have to protect the interests of my workers. I have to worry about their health care. I have to worry about their lives. I'm trying to realize that they have a life outside of my place of work and that my little job is just something that God may be doing to do something much greater and more lasting in their life. And if God comes between the boss and the people, suddenly the boss begins to pray for the people. That doesn't happen a lot. But if I'm the servant, if I'm the employee, and I put God in between me and the boss, I have to look out for the interests of the boss. Now all of a sudden, his reputation is as important to me as it is to him. The quality of what I actually produce is as important to me as it is to him. His assets are important to me now because they're not just his assets. They belong to the Father, whether he knows it or not. Now I begin to pray for the boss. And I realize that God is using his little job to do something in his life that is far bigger than his company. If I am the boss, I realize that I cannot build my little kingdom on the backs of my people. But if I'm the people, I realize that I have an obligation to work at the pleasure of the boss. If I'm the boss, I have to make my expectations clear now. I have to have measurable goals. But if I'm the people and God is in the middle, I have to show up for work. And I have to work all day. And I have to stop screwing around on the internet while I'm at work. And I have to do the things at work that he thinks I'm actually doing all day. If I'm the boss and God is in the middle and it comes time to fire somebody, I have to fire them as though I were firing Jesus. For all I know, I am. But if I'm the people and I've just been fired by the boss and God is in the middle, I can't walk out and start saying negative things about him or his company. I can't roll my eyes. I can't make snide remarks. I can't rally people against him anymore. I have to act as though it was Jesus who just fired me, because for all I know, it was. You see it? Suddenly everything is different if God is in the middle of you in the situation. So here is what Peter says. Your job is not your living. Your job is a sacrament. It is the place where you will go and you will find God there, and together you will do something that neither of you would do alone. And because it is your sacrament, it's your means of grace. It is there in your job God will show up. And if God is there, that's who you work for. And you will be tempted, says Peter, you will be tempted to think that if the leaders above you are harsh and unjust, if they beat you, if they hurl insults at you, all bets are off, because the world is supposed to be fair. And if it's not, you can make it fair. But that is wrong. Peter says that assumption is killing us. He says if your boss threatens you and hurls insults at you and unjustly punishes you, if your boss ignores the good that you do and keeps wanting more out of you, you submit to the God who is in between you and the boss. And when you do this, says Peter, grace will come. This is what he means when he says, if you suffer unjustly, it is commendable to God. Literally what he says is, if you suffer unjustly because you are conscious of God, grace will come to you through the suffering. But only if you are conscious of God. Now, this morning, I thought the best way for us to end is with this charge. What would happen in a congregation like this if all of a sudden all of the people who profess the name of Jesus Christ would suddenly realize the weight of what they are professing? What would be different if for the first time in our lives we stopped resisting and we just said, you know what? I am not responsible for that person's mind. I am responsible for my allegiance to the God who is in between me and that person. That's the one I serve. That's the one I follow. And I'd just be crass enough to say, what would happen if all over this congregation, Christians would stop excusing the riffraff that goes on every single week in the name of justice and fairness? And we would just step up and say, I am not responsible for fairness. Justice is not my job. Trust is a finer virtue than justice. What if we would say that? Trust is a finer virtue than justice. And so when I cannot control the top, I submit to the top as to God. And I will learn trust here.
As always, we welcome your feedback on each month's presentation. Feel free to give us a call with your comments, or if you prefer, you may fax or email our office. If you are serious about profitable growth, you might want to consider attending one of our 3-day basic business boot camps. Check out our website at www.grandyassociates.com or call us at 1-800-432-7963 for a current listing of dates and locations through May 2009. The Service Contractors Business Presentation of the Month is produced and distributed by Grandian Associates. If we can be of service to you, please give us a call on our toll-free line, 1-800-432-7963. Until next month, remember, invest your time and invest your money in those things that will reproduce.